Okay, the title that I was given had more numbers than this did, so I deleted it. The title has something to do with 2D and 3D aspects, but I'll try to mention something about dimensionality towards the end of the talk. Primarily, I'm going to be talking about observational signatures of stuff that looks like the standard reconnection picture for eruptive flares. I chose this particular background image because it has some very nice loops with cuspy things on top, and I thought it was a good place to start. What I'm not going to talk about is how the current sheet gets set up in the first place, but only what happens afterward when the reconnection begins. I'm not going to talk about things like the breakout model, although I believe it happens sometimes. But what I will try to talk about is the reconnection itself. I swiped this lovely cartoon from one of our colleagues. But the general idea is that we have magnetic field swept into a region in the middle where there is some diffusion by some means, which then is expelled outwards due to magnetic tension in these reconnected magnetic flux tubes or field lines. Of course, this is only one version of the cartoon. It's an infinitesimal, and you can paste it together in any orientation you like. The one that I'm going to draw most often today is this one, which we've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of times. And I tried to outline some of the major players in this CSHKP cartoon. But again, I want to stress, this is only one orientation of the cartoon, and you can bend it and twist it any way you like and represent many of the things that we see, but not all. So beginning from the top, arbitrarily, is a plasmoid or region of closed field which can be ejected and leave the area. I'm representing this as the photosphere or chromosphere, as is commonly done. The reconnection will happen here as field is swept inwards. This X point where the diffusion and reconnection happen will slowly drift upwards as more and more field gets swept into the region. There's nothing really new here. You've all seen this. You're all familiar with it, so I'm sure there won't be any real surprises today. But as this field is retracted away from the reconnection zone, a number of things can happen. For instance, we have the outflow motions or outflow jets, depending on how fast they go. There may be some slow mode standing shocks above and below, although I've only drawn them on the lower side. As this outflowing field collides with previously closed field, we may have a fast mode shock or a termination shock. And this is the stuff that one of the nice things that Terry talked about this morning and the possibility of the condensation and thermal instability. Particles may also be trapped in here, and we can have hard X-ray sources and particle trapping. The particles can then escape downwards, and some nice work that's been demonstrated by many people, including Pete Martins and Lindsay, and who else? And then, of course, the hot loops will eventually cool to cooler loops, and as they do so, they shrink. There's also the energy, the heat energy conducted downwards, and we have lots of signatures at the chromosphere, including the hard X-ray double sources, H-alpha ribbons, blue shifts, and red shifts. But what I want to talk about is how many of these things have actually been seen. And there is reason to believe that most of these, if not all of them, have been seen at least tentatively at least once. I don't think it's fair to expect that in any one flare we'll see all of these elements. And from flare to flare, some will have more or less importance than others, depending on the vagaries of magnetic field strength, the plasma density, the helicity, the interconnectedness, the twisted interlinking. And so it makes the observational task very challenging. But piece by piece over the years, it seems like lots of these have been have revealed themselves. I'll draw the same cartoon, but this time with a bibliography of observations that I think are representative. You may or may not agree with some of these, but why not go through the go through them from the top. Plasmoids at the top may have been observed by Sheely with Lasko several years ago, although the first paper by Sheely et al. Didn't really make that interpretation. Van Alst et al. And Wang et al. Used the streamer blobs in terms of reconnection outflows, although the first paper by Sheely didn't so much. Tsuneta in 1997 published a set of observations that has many of the items on this cartoon, including something that looks like a fast mode standing shock or a very hot source above the X point and beneath the closed plasmoid slowly moving upward. This is the image I'm referring to, and he has a sequence of these. This is a temperature map, and you can see this hot source. He identifies the SXT loop, the hotter wings of it, which probably correspond to the slow mode shock. He has an estimate of where he thinks the X point is. The closed field plasmoid is already moved out of the field of the view at this time. And then this hot thing, which doesn't have much density at all, that moves out with it in subsequent images. As I said, it's a tentative observation. I don't know any of any others like this. But you got to start somewhere. I'll come back to the flow fields around the X point in a moment, but first I wanted to talk about the rising X point itself. You can't see the X point directly, at least not that I know of. But what we use instead, or have been used in these three papers anyway, is a proxy. That's the growing height of the loops underneath it, maybe the growing cusp. I think most of us, if not everyone, has seen movies from Trace, EIT, SXT of the cusp loops getting taller and taller and taller. And this is a proxy for the rising reconnection point. It's kind of a poor proxy quantitatively because, well, the X point's moving upward. And relative to the X point, the cusps are moving downward with a speed that we don't exactly know. So although you can say that qualitatively, it certainly resembles it, like this example here. Please watch these loops, and the loops that form above them, and the loops that form above them, and the loops that form above them. It resembles the idea of an X point moving upward, but you can't say exactly what speed the X point moves at. Now the flow fields around the X point or reconnection region are a long-sought observational trophy because the speed at which gas moves or magnetic field or whatever moves into the X point and the speed at which it expels outward, well, that tells a lot about what's going on inside. What are the conditions and what's the speed of the reconnection and so forth. And so this is something that a lot of observers have looked for and looked at. The first ones may be here in Hundhausen and Forbes and Acton in 96, although they're excruciatingly slow motions. Here in Hundhausen, we're looking at a helmet streamer on the southwest limb and notice some bright X-ray objects or condensations slowly moving down at something like 5 kilometers a second, which is pretty slow. On further thought, this kind of motion that he and Hundhausen described may be more like a thermal shrinkage of the type that Schweska et al. Described in 87. Forbes and Acton looked at the nice candle flame cusp of Sunetta's famous event and tried to measure the difference between the height of a cusp and the height of the same loop sometime later, and make an inference about how much this height has changed. I put a question mark next to Stirling et al. They made an analysis of some blue shifts that were seen in the tops of some flares that were very far beyond the limb. A blue shift then suggests moving towards the observer or downward in the flare loops. Stirling et al. Made some interpretations that suggested that it's not due to reconnection outflow. But since I'm not 100% convinced by their argument, I went ahead and listed it. The question mark will let you make your own judgment. There are some flows observed by SXT, and those are the ones that Hugh Hudson and I have tried to describe. These are motions of between 50 and 500 kilometers per second downward above the arcade. Similarly, Wang et al. And Simnet described both downflows and upflows in LASCO images. I think I have an image, in fact. This I swipe from Simnet from the HESI proceedings. And these are difference images from LASCO, and you can just barely make out a faint bright feature trailed by a faint dark feature, and another one just like it in the other direction. Now, their upflow speeds are something like 150 to 300 kilometers a second. Downflow is somewhere, but a little bit slower. Wang actually records these as decelerating as they get lower and lower. So that's not entirely consistent with a gravitational acceleration, but it is. It may be consistent with the relaxation of a magnetic tension. These, I think, are wonderful, and we need to get more observations like that. Some of the flows observed by LASCO are in times of quiescence at sector boundaries, and therefore may have nothing to do with CMEs or eruptive flares. But then some of them are certainly associated with CMEs. Inflows into the reconnection region have only been observed once. And this is still a tentative identification. This is by Yokoyama et al. It's a lovely sequence of EIT images. And if you could please watch this region up here, if you haven't already seen this movie several times, it's quite nice. It very closely resembles the 2D drawing of this CSH-KP model, in that we have a hot cusp growing underneath a cusp region in which there is first something thrown out and then a sweeping in of material. This morning, Lindsay Fletcher showed some stack plots that Yokoyama-san made of these to demonstrate that there really is something moving in there at a speed of 5 kilometers a second. That's kind of a slow inflow speed, but that's what they got. The resemblance to the 2D cartoon is remarkable. Okay. The slow mode shocks cause plasma heating.
David?
Yes, sir.
10 minutes left before question.
Okay. Cause plasma heating. The best known example of this is by Sunetta et al. Here's the brightness. Here's a contour of the emission measure. And you see the temperature is hottest right out here. Not in the brightest part, but at the edge of it, right where you expect the standing mode shock to be. The slow mode shock, excuse me. Partly because I'm not qualified to talk about it, and partly because we're short on time, I won't spend a lot of time discussing fast mode shock or the chromospheric signatures. I think everyone knows about Masuda sources. A very good review and comparison of analyses is in Alexander and Metcalf. The OS et al. Reference is to a possible fast mode shock scene in radio. And I say possible because I don't understand much about type 2 bursts. But the idea is that if a type 2 burst is indicative of a fast mode shock, then a standing type 2 burst indicates a standing fast mode shock. Henry Orris shows some observation in which he interprets it as a standing type 2 burst. And the frequency is consistent with the plasma density of 10 to the ninth. And so the interpretation is possibly for a fast mode standing shock down here. When it comes to questions about radio signatures, I'd ask Gopal or Hugh Hudson. Hot loops cool, and as they do so, they shrink. And as more loops are reconnected, then new loops form above. So in the observations, we should see hot loops forming higher and higher, and then contracting as they cool, and these observations are fairly well known. And then particles and chromospheric signatures, these are fairly well known. Let's see, Sakal made his thesis on hard X-ray sources, in particular double hard X-ray sources, to show the connectivity. Tchaikovsky has some wonderful red and blue shift sequences, which Lindsay showed this morning. And this is indicative of hot material flowing up the loops on the outer edge and cooler stuff flowing back down again on the inner side. Now, the observations don't fit into the cartoon perfectly. And so if they're not part of the standard solution, then they must be part of the standard problem. In particular, the downflow is measured by Wang et al., by McKenzie and Hudson. They're fairly slow. Slower than what we initially thought. They're on the order of dozens or hundreds of kilometers a second, not thousands. Is it possible that they are subalphanic? That would be a representation of the conditions downstream of the reconnection. I think in Priest and Forbes' book in Chapter 4, there's an explanation of why they might be subalphanic. On the other hand, what is the alphane speed? We're trying to figure out what the speed of a magnetic disturbance would be in a region where the plasma density is not well known, the magnetic field strength is not well known and is partially annihilated, there may be turbulence. And so this may all give us some insight into the conditions upstream of the reconnection. I think Biskamp in 1980 suggested that the retraction might even be slowed by an interaction with a return current at the downstream edge of the diffusion region. At the same time, the upflows in Alaska may tell us something about the conditions and the high altitude and the high corona. So we need to analyze these and help to draw some inferences to the models. The inflows, we only have one measurement so far. It suggests a slow reconnection, according to Yokoyama, but the measurements are very imprecise given the observations. If we can make more of these, we might be able to learn some physics from it. Also, the alphane speed found by Yokoyama has a very broad range, but you'll see it's, again, slower than the thousands of kilometers that is often quoted. Fast mode standing shocks, have they been observed? We have these few examples of possibility. And obviously, we need to make more of these. But a good question is, once we have these observations, what do they show us? And I'm not sure that I'm qualified to answer that question at this point. I wanted to say a word about 2D versus 3D aspects, because that was the title that I found printed up in the schedule. Some of these observations look very much like the 2D cartoon. We've drawn the CSHKP in two dimensions per force, and it's done very well. But there are some observations which can only be treated well by 3D. The Zunetta observation of the slow mode shocks Fits very well with the flat paper cartoon. So does Yokoyama's movie. Although there's still quite a lot that we can learn from it. Chekovska et al. Have this this nice panel. You see the H alpha ribbon. And on the outer edge, blue shifts. On the inner side, this wide area of red shifts, drooping down the loops. And finally, three-dimensional stuff. This is the kind of observations that I've been most interested in recently. For instance, Shveska et al. Were the first to describe arcades with spikes on the top of them. These are X-ray spikes. They're roughly linear, and they can be quite tall. In this image, we detected them as tall as half a solar radius. What the heck are they? Suggestions have been they're like jets. They are tall, skinny cusps on loops. That's one that I'm kind of favoring myself at the moment. They might be a fluting instability along the sheet. Shibasaki-san has suggested that they are, in fact, a ballooning instability of material blowing out the top. But it sure would be nice to see them turn out of some model, which I haven't seen yet. In this same set of observations, now this wasn't the same arcade that Shveska showed, but I brought it up because the SXT movies have shown in this region material moving downward, and those are the downflows that I mentioned a few minutes ago. They are necessarily a three-dimensional feature because you can see them drooping down here. They have a finite characteristic size. There's got to be a reason for that too, but I don't know what it is. Probably the biggest, darkest one is right there.
How fast are we moving?
These are about 200 to 400 kilometers a second. The largest ones here are a couple of Earths in diameter. These are the half-resolution images from SXT, so these pixels are 4.5 or 5 arc seconds. My interpretation of these things, and you can believe it or don't, is that they represent a cross-section of a flux tube that has reconnected and is linking through this sheet above the arcade. And as the magnetic tension pulls it downward, the feature that we're seeing here is a cross-section through the sheet, and it moves downward. If this flux tube has filled with plasma through evaporation or whyever, then we'll see a hot loop shrinking downward. If it hasn't filled up yet, we'll just see this dark thing surrounded by the bright stuff that it's linking through. The dark features have been seen a lot. Bright shrinking loops we've seen in maybe a dozen cases. This is a toy model of one of these shrinking flux tubes, and I wanted to introduce this one first because in a moment I'm going to show more of them. But rather than in 2.5 dimensions something like an X line moving upward and a mass continuous flow downward into the top of the arcade, I've stolen Jim Klimchuk's cartoon in which it's possible that, well, in 3 dimensions, these flux tubes can be reconnecting just anywhere. This one, and then this one, and then this one, and then this one, at different places. So drawing on the same Barnafkin sketch, as I showed before, if we have several of these loops, we might be able to build an arcade out of them, and we might see these downflowing features. As I said, this is a Barnafkin sketch. There's no physics in it. These are just lines drawn and shrinking the way I told them to. There's no loop model or heating associated with any of these. There's no helicity. There's no interconnectedness. But I wanted to get you thinking. And just to drum it into your head, I'll compare it again, and we can see these things moving downward, and you can decide for yourself whether it's hogwash or reasonable. Before I leave, I do want to mention another set of three-dimensional stuff. And if you click it enough times, it responds. There we go. Fletcher et al. And also Mandrini et al. Have done some good work with three-dimensional considerations, I think. Mandrini et al. Had separatrices and quasi-separatrix layers, and using those they indicated where flare brightenings ought to occur. And they got it pretty well, I think. Fletcher et al. Have traced a topology of this small region and noticed that it changed, and it changed at a time and in a way that's fairly consistent with the observation, I believe. So I think it's on the right path. I think it's a good move, and I think that we should do more of it. So right there, I'll quit. Thanks very much.
So I would expect that you can only see indirect evidence for the jet, you know, after it's crashed into the standing fast mode shock, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is there any reaction to that? Well, concerning the emission measure, those, you know, the stuff I was doing was all 2D. But if you have a 3D system, it might be that you get evaporation out of the plane of my figures, which would increase the densities higher up in the region above. So.
But the thing is, I
have to say it was a surprise that you could see anything at all in Jovan, so it's a pretty dramatic discovery for me.
And I'd point out that part of the observation of those outflows is that you don't see anything. You have a bright background, you have dark stuff with very little emission measure moving through it. There are a few cases where we do see features that look like X-ray emitting loops shrinking at about the same speed with about the same diameter. And nearly a similar location as the X-ray voids as well.
Don't you expect the loop will have snapped down to the fast mode shock before the evaporation has had time to really appreciably cool? And that's the time scale for that cooling down is very short.
Depending on how far up that X line is.
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that.
But anyway,
don't have to answer.
The evaporation is on the field largely coming very slowly.
But the evaporation is only driven as long as there's particles driving it, presumably. And once you've reconnected the field lines, the particles are gone. In a tenth of a second, you've got nothing left to drive the reconnection with. And the evaporation with, and the evaporation itself will happen on kind of like a sound travel time, so 20 seconds or so, and then it's going to start to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think you have to understand the spike structures really to understand why you see those voids, because given that the spikes are there, David told me some time ago that when you look at these movies carefully, you can actually see the spikes kind of deflecting as the void is moving the spike structures around as it comes down. And maybe the presence of the spikes makes it possible. So understanding their origin might be the explanation.
Certainly the spikes help to make it visible. In cases where there is no super arcade structure, I can't really comment whether there's any downflow because there's not a background to see the tracers against, except in the cases where there are bright loops moving down.
About the spikes, I mean, in the picture there that you showed of the patchy reconnection, that mm-hmm. looked like a plausible explanation. It's just that the spikes are the bits which haven't reconnected. The downflows happen between the spikes, which are the bits which have not undergone reconnection yet.
So if I understand correctly, you're suggesting that the spikes, the tall, bright things,
mm-hmm.
May be loops that have not yet reconnected?
Well, for example,
or have not shrunk? Or
yes, exactly. Okay. Something which is heading towards a next type configuration, like you drew in that cartoon.
Yeah.
But that particular X type reconfiguration has not reconnected. So
the idea then is that these might be open field lines or open flux tubes that have that are adjacent to or surrounded by things that have
not
closed already.
Open, but which is in an X-type configuration, but it's not reconnecting at that moment. I mean, this is one of the things about the cusps. Why is the cusp pointy if the particles are meant to be evaporating material up onto the closed fields? The pointy bit shouldn't have had time to fill with plasma. But if reconnection has just stopped and left the field kind of hanging off the end of the current sheet, then maybe that's what gives
them. I see. So that those might be indicators of stagnated reconnection. Which again brings back the idea of the patchiness and the here and there type reconnection.
George, sort of a follow-up question on that. Can you say anything about what the ratio of the emission measure is, like in the cusp region, versus what we think of as the classic flare from
I could, if I could remember the numbers. But what I can remember is that the brightness ratio between the spikes and the lanes in between them is about a factor of 2. Compared to the arcades underneath them, it's more than a factor of 10. The arcades are considerably brighter. It makes them very difficult to analyze as well. We don't have any temperature measurements.
The energy balance in the bulk of the flare plasma, the classic picture that the Plinchard talked about yesterday, just this static along the atmosphere and also goes to be the right way to treat that, you think?
I'm not sure I heard you.
Well, Jim talked about static coronal loops, not in the case of flares, but just in the case of understanding coronal heating.
Uh-huh.
If you want to understand, if you want to model the bulk of the flare plasma, is it still the case that you could use static coronal loops and not worry about the reconnection, just treat it parametrically through a heat plate? Or does the mass, the addition of mass through the reconnection have a big impact?
Well, if there's mass introduced, I'm going to assume that most of it's coming from the feet, as the cartoon has always suggested. I think that the spikes are another feather on the peacock that we haven't understood yet, but it doesn't help us understand the whole peacock. The downflows, I think, are indicative, perhaps, of what the... maybe of the rate of the reconnection, maybe of the plasma parameters above the arcade, and maybe of the fact that, well, certainly the fact that the reconnection appears to persist long into the decay phase. These flows have been observed for many hours after the impulsive phase, maybe even half a day. The spikes have been observed for more than a day after the flare.
Did HXT continue to show hard X-ray emission while it was going on?
I don't know. I think not. Well, let me change my answer on that. The HXT almost always shows the X-ray at the beginning of the flare. Most of this stuff, the spikes and the downflows, are seen not at the very initiation of the flare. Some are seen during the rise phase, but usually not within the first 5 minutes, but there may be exceptions to that too that I can't recall at the moment.
What do you think is the cause of the spacing at this spot? I mean, that must be giving you a clue as to their nature.
I got a hunch that they're, well, it's all a hunch. There is a possibility that, in fact, I think maybe you suggested this, that the spacing of the spikes is startlingly similar to the spacing or the physical size of the supergranules or the chromospheric network. Why a physical length scale should persist from the feet to the superarcade region despite the existence of an eruptive flare, I think would be profound.
All right. Thank you, David. And